The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I am joined by Frank Bigeon, one of the most important people in Bordeaux, in the wine region there. Some very famous vineyards, the general manager, the technical director, I believe. Frank, I was wondering, because your English is very good, my French is horrible. Could you say the name of the estates that we'll be talking about today?
Thank you, Matt. Effectively, now, Vignoble de la Rose owned four different estates, and two estates we are going to discover today. Mm-hmm. The first is Château La Rose Trentaudon, 192 hectares on the left bank of the river, with a vintage 09. What a great, opulent vintage, and quite untypical for Bordeaux. And the second one is La Rose Pergançon, just situated on the south of La Rose Trentaudon, 26 hectares, with probably the most incredible vintage for me I ever made, is a 2010.
What was it about 2010? Because I think people are always interested in what makes a great vintage. So what was it about 2010 for La Rose that worked so well for you?
Well, the 2010... for all the winemakers in Bordeaux, is considering as the mythic vintage for us. My dad and my granddad talked a lot about the mythic and famous 1961, and for us, our generation, consider that the 2010 is really more or less the same so great vintage. Why? Because all the climate during the growing of the vines was great. The right climate, the right temperature, just enough rain at the right moment, and the perfect climate for the picking gave this fantastic vintage.
And the 2009, what made it so opulent?
The 09 was really unbelievable due to the so great ripeness, even for Cabernet Sauvignon and Petit Verdot. And it was a vintage following immediately the 07 and the 08 with less ripeness. And probably we never reached this so huge quantity of sugar in the berries. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, as a vintage with hot climatic conditions, we consider that we need to drink this vintage probably earlier of the other one. Mm-hmm. Because it's so opulent, so rich, and so aromatic with a lot of ripe fruit notes that we need to taste it probably before the 2010.
Well, it smells fantastic. Like I always tell people, they're just, Bordeaux has a smell, you know, and you can just break it down as simple as you can always, you usually can always tell just what Bordeaux smells like, just the plum, but the you know, a little bit of, sometimes a little bit of red fruit, but the spice and the earth, and like just, it's all sort of there. And before we get more into these wines, I want to talk a little bit about you and just your own journey to now helming one of the largest wineries in Medoc. I believe you're a winemaker in Chile, an assistant technical manager at Chateau Latour. I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey into wine.
Yeah, but I began my career effectively at Chateau Latour between 85 and 89 as the assistant of the winemaker. And in 89, I decided to have another challenge, and it was a big one because at this time, La Rose Trentaudon was the largest vineyard in Bordeaux and on the left bank. I became the technical manager and winemaker of La Rose Trentaudon. Now, after 31 vintages, mm-hmm. I'm getting in charge of the general managing of the group and chief winemaking of the four estates. Effectively, I had a small experience in Chile because we invest in Chile close to Rancagua on the south of Santiago, close to the Andes. Invested in a vineyard of 100 hectares named Casa del Toqui. And I managed this estate during 7-8 years.
What did you take from your time in Chile? Because obviously it'd be very different in terms of the laws, labor, obviously the temperature, the soil. Like, just, it's very different. What did you take from your time in Chile?
I think the most important was to try to understand why at this time people loved Chilean wine. And they loved the fruitiness, the velvetiness of the tannins, and the nice presentation of the wine with nice color. At this time, Bordeaux was still a little bit austere sometimes in some vintages. Mm-hmm. And probably the Chilean style, Chilean wine, Chilean style, was completely a little bit at the opposite of the Bordeaux style. And the reason why, when I understood what is exactly a ripe grape fruit to do a great wine, we decided to change a lot of things at La Rose Trentonon and on the other vineyard.
Really?
And especially, probably, the date of the picking. We were more focused on the ripeness of the skin before the picking to be sure that finally in the bottle, the wine was great.
What does it mean to be a responsible vineyard?
Well, Vignoble de la Rose and its four vineyards are engaged since many years. I remember this 2007 in a real policy of sustainability. For us to be sustainable is not only to care the environment. Effectively, we manage our vineyard with only biocontrol product to protect the vineyard. But also to be sustainable is to care the social part. And for that, we were the first vineyard in Bordeaux and probably in France to implement physical activities for the workers before to begin the day. Because to work in a vineyard is a quite hard job. Mm-hmm. And we need to care the people and to prepare them to do this job every day. We were the first, and also, for example, we have a lot of training every year. More or less, each person receives at least 8 to 10 days of training during a year.
And I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the big things for you guys is that a lot of the employees live close, and that for you, the carbon footprint is just as important to the employees as chemicals or what you do in the vineyard?
Well, in terms of impact on the planet, we checked a few years ago the level of our production of carbon dioxide to see what we were. Mm-hmm. 10 years after, last year we did a new check to see the evolution of our activities, and we low more than 20% our impact in terms of production of carbon dioxide. We know that it could be probably quite difficult to be completely neutral, but we are sure that if everybody, each company, each vineyard do the same, it could be a real success for the planet.
I read that the 2010 vintage took 1.5 liters of water to produce 1 liter of wine, compared to in 2009, it was 1.8 liters. That's a pretty big drop from one year to the other.
Yeah, Matt. Effectively, you could analysis vintage after vintage, but for us, it's easier to do an analysis on the average, because some vintages, you can use more water per liter of wine, specifically when you crop is quite tiny, because you need the same quantity of water to clean, for example, the tanks or the reception of the grapes. And it's not depending on the quantity of grapes. You could produce 5 tons per hectare or 10 tons per hectare of grapes. The quantity of water will be exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And effectively, if your vintage is a vintage with a very small crop, the quantity of water will be probably the double of the precedent vintage. We prefer to analysis the global of our consumption of water, And today we work with an average of between 2 and 3 liters of water per liter of wine. Mm-hmm. That's the average on the last 10 years.
Oh, okay. I want to talk about climate change and a lot more with Bordeaux, but I was wondering if you try and talk about the 2009, and I always mispronounce the Trenton. No, how do I pronounce that? The La Rose
Trentodon.
Trentodon.
As I explained, a very early picking, beginning at the end of September, with a huge ripeness, especially for the Merlot. We pick the Merlot with a richness in sugar close to the equivalent in alcohol at 15. It was a beginning, you know, the beginning of the impact of the changing of climate on our grapes. And the future showed that effectively, year after year, the Merlot is more overripe. It's the reason why, and we could talk later, we try to find other grape varieties to try to, not to change completely the Merlot with another grape variety, but just to be sure that finally in the wine, we still have something well balanced. 09, great ripeness, even for Cabernet Sauvignon, very aromatic with dry fruit, prune, and you can have also with some years in the bottle, chocolate, dark chocolate, not too much licorice. I think probably the 10 will show more licorice, but dry plum, very almost sweety, and so well integrated tannins due to the perfect ripeness of the skin.
It's very welcoming. If I just having a, like, just it goes down smooth, all those sorts of things. You're right. There is a little bit of this sweetness, but it's not obviously not. It's a very dry wine. Yeah, like this is a very warm, welcoming, enjoyable, full-bodied glass of Bordeaux. I mean, first, it's delicious. I was wondering, for people sometimes get intimidated by French wine, and they get intimidated by Bordeaux, and that's your fault when you used to work at Chateau Latour. You know, Latour, do I buy a car or a six pack of their wine? And that's what these wines and Cru Bourgeois is so important. I was wondering if you could talk just about this style of wine, this classification, right, how important it is.
Yeah. Effectively, today, La Rose Trentodon is considering as the most popular wine in our domestic market and abroad too. Mm-hmm. Why? The ratio price-quality is unbelievable. The classification of La Rose Trentodon, and we can talk about the new classification of Cru Bourgeois.
I wanted to get into it because it seems to change every couple of years.
Exactly. But we lived with an annual recognition from 08 to 17. Now, we just received the result of the last new official classification for Cru Bourgeois. This classification was official for the vintage 2018 to the vintage 2022, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And now the classification gave 249 Cru Bourgeois. And amongst these 249 Cru Bourgeois, you have 14 exceptional Cru Bourgeois. And we have one elected exceptional Cru Bourgeois. It's a Chateau Arnaud. It's a tiny estate we have. Mm-hmm. Close to Margaux, 17 hectares. And La Rose Pergançon and La Rose Trentodon, the both estates elected Cru Bourgeois Supérieur amongst the 56 Cru Bourgeois Supérieur of the classification. And the rest of the Cru were regular Cru Bourgeois. At this level of quality, at this level of price, we consider that Cru Bourgeois is a real alternative to the classified growth. It's not significant that it's better in terms of quality. It's not my explanation. Just to say that it's a real alternative in terms of ratio, quality price. And we consider that today, a normal consumer like me, because I'm just trying to find every week, every month, for me at home, wine between 8 and 25, 30 euro a bottle, yeah. No more.
When someone sees Cru Bourgeois, when they see that on the label, what does that mean? Like when I see that, When I see on the bottle, Cru Bourgeois, I mean, that means it's a certain classification. But for some people that are listening to this podcast, they're just getting into wine. And since, I mean, you guys make some of the best stuff, what does that mean? What should someone expect?
Honestly, today, the consumer need to check two things. First, that on the label, you have the mentioned Cru Bourgeois, and on the back label or on the capsule, an authentication with an official sticker to guarantee that it's a real Cru Bourgeois. And in terms of a guarantee, it's a guarantee to have very serious border wines checked in the past with an annual tasting every year, annual blind tasting every year, and now Cru Bourgeois wine through an official classification. In terms of quality for the consumer, is to be sure that he will have a well-balanced wine with not a new style, but the young people now managing the estates try to find more affordability for the wine. And I think that it's really, really the purpose of the family of Cru Bourgeois.
And what happened with the classification? I know that, I think it was 2003, it got annulled. There were people that were angry. It was going to come back for 1 year, but then it had to be like a year later. And it's been going on since 1932. And it seems like every decade or so, it changes. What happened in 03 and where are we now?
Yeah, if we remembered, the classification made in 03, but the first was in 1932. Until the new classification made in 2003. But it was a classification for, if I remember, 10 years. With a period of 10 years, the people we are not agree with the result of the classification have the time to, to contest.
Yeah.
To contest with all the juridic keys to contest the classification. This one, made in 2020, it's just made for 5 years. And in 5 years, you don't have any time to contest the classification. It's a reason why you are very confident on the stable position of this classification without any real problem of contest from the other, from some wine growers.
Was there a bottle for you growing up that turned you into, that you wanted to become a winemaker? Did you have a moment where you realized, I want to spend my life making wine? I always, my first couple podcasts, I told people it was an old Barolo that first turned me onto wine. I'm wondering if you had those moments growing up.
First, I think that in life, everything is a question of meetings. When I began to work at Chateau Latour, it was my first job.
That's a hell of a first job.
Yeah,
but
you know, without any help from everybody, just a research of employment in a newspaper, and I found the job. Okay,
yeah.
I met the chairman, an English guy. We talked a lot about the everything, the vines, the wine, and the life. And I began my job in 85, and I met immediately technical manager. It was an old guy. I remembered all my life. He was Jean-Paul Gardère, dead now, but Jean-Paul Gardère. And with him, I understood what is a complete and full dedication to the job. And finally, it's not a job. He gave his life to the Latour vineyard. I gave my life to La Rose Trentodon and the other vineyards. And you don't imagine when you just finished your studies that okay, my career will be this one. No, I think it's a question of meeting. And I met Jean-Paul Gardère, and it was. He was for me my, spiritual father.
Yeah,
in the job.
What is the hardest? And this doesn't have to be in 2020, but during any of your time making wine, what do the hardest days? What do they look like for you? What do they feel like?
I think the hardest days is the day when you need to decide the date to pick the grapes.
Oh, that must be so much pressure.
Because with this decision, and we know that 2 days before or 2 days later could be changed completely the wine.
Yeah.
So reason why to decide, first, I'm not alone. I work with a team, 5-6 people tasting the grapes of all the plots to be sure that we will take the right decision. But it's probably the most difficult because we know that the impact of this decision is unbelievable on the final quality of the wine.
That would be. Have you ever second-guessed? Like, you ever like, no, we got to pick on this day, and then you realize, oh, I should have waited 2 more days. I mean that decision, like that, for the people listening, that's pretty wild.
To help us, I decided to work from the 2016 with a consultant in enology to have another eye about the what is a great ripeness. I decided to work with Hubert Deboire. Hubert Deboire is the owner of Chateau L'Angelus, the first classified growth of Saint-Emilion. And we have a very good relationship since many years. And when I explained at Hubert Deboire what was our project, what we wanted for the future for our four vineyards, he said, Frank, okay, it's a great project, and I work with you, and now, since the 2016, Hubert Deboire is part of the team, tasting the grapes, and with another vision, especially for the Merlot, because, as you know, L'Angelus is on the right bank of the river, with more Merlot, I don't remember, but probably 80 to 90%, and the eye and the expertise of Hubert Deboire on the Merlot is great, and we needed that.
I was wondering if we could try the 2010, which is 45. The last one was 60% Cab, 40% Merlot. This one, 50% Cab, 45 Merlot with 5% Petit Verdot. And what I love about the information you guys have here, like the information sheet, is put in that Petit Verdot color, structure, freshness. I think for people that are getting into Bordeaux wines, they're always interested in what each grape brings to the bottle.
La Rose Pergançon, effectively, a small percentage of Petit Verdot, 5%. We needed to try to find great varieties giving us, year after year, well-balancing the wine. Because, as I explained, the Merlot is, year after year, a little bit more overripe. And we need to have more freshness in the wine because we consider that. For Bordeaux, one part of the figure of Bordeaux is to be fresh. To have a good acidity, to support the wine, and to support the wine even after quite long aging in bottle. It's for this item of acidity, we are very lucky in our terroir of Saint-Laurent-du-Médoc because we are able to keep a real natural acidity in the wine, even with a great ripeness. If I remember, the Ona in Trentodon, we talked about a pH of 3.5. It's a little bit technical, but it's just to explain that the acidity is great. And the 10 is exactly the same. And with the Petit Verdot, we know that we will be able in the future to keep this freshness. The particularity of the La Rose Pergançon, as the vineyard is planted 50% on limestone and clay and 50% on gravel and clay, the middle of the palate is a little bit more full-bodied and dense than La Rose Trentodon. Because La Rose Trentodon is planted only on gravel and sandy gravel soil. Mm-hmm. Pergançon, okay, with more clay, more density in the middle of the palate. But the quality of the quality of the tannins, the velvetiness and silkiness of the tannins are exactly the same.
Oh yeah,
it's a philosophy of vinification.
Yeah, you can absolutely feel the tannins on the tan. I get a little bit more fruit, but you're right about the freshness. I find the older I get, one of my keys to a good glass of wine, do I want to have a second glass? You know, you could, you know, you can have, you know, some big syrupy Amarone, and after one glass, like, I'm done, I'm out. Like, just please, I need to move on. But yeah, like, you're right. The freshness is there. Like, this is,
but
the body in the mid, like, it's got the power, but at the end, it, the freshness, the acid is there.
Matt, I love your explanation, because we have an old saying in Bordeaux, a good wine is a wine when you have drunk a glass, you ask another one. That's the description of a good wine. And Bordeaux wines, with a nice freshness, nice acidity, present this sort of profile. And is the reason why, year after year, with more education, people in France or abroad try to find something. It's not a blockbuster wine like a big Cabernet from Napa Valley, mm-hmm. or big wine from Languedoc. I love wine from Languedoc, but I love to drink wine glass.
Yeah.
But, you know, with just one glass per person, it could be difficult to sell a crop.
Yes. you're 100% right. And that's always the challenge I find with Napa Cabernet, is how do you get that balance? Because you want the big, the full body. That's part of Napa Cabernet. But then can you have enough of that and still have acid, and still have the acid? That's to have that enough elegance to balance it out. That's the toughest part for people that are making Cabernet.
I suppose that's the key for Napa Valley, and some vineyards began to do that, is to plant the vineyard a little bit higher than now,
mm-hmm.
and or on Sonoma, with something more well balanced in the wine. I see on the share a dense Cabernet from Napa. I think it's a Cabernet I tasted a few months ago, and I was amazed by the great balance of the wine. But effectively, the vineyard seems to be planted higher.
Yeah.
With a higher altitude.
Yeah, versus the valley floor stuff. I'm wondering, I read this quote where you were talking about the 2018 vintage, and you said, for anyone who had a doubt about climate change, the year 2018 should shake up their beliefs a little. I'm curious, what was it about 2018?
2018 was an incredible year with a huge quantity of rain during spring until beginning of June. And from middle of June until end of October, almost nothing at all. Very, very dry. And the following year, exactly the same. The reason why we can't see the changing of climate. In terms of quality for the grapes, for the 18, the problem was at the beginning of the growing, we had some frost, because we have some frost even at the beginning of May. And for the rest, the climate was perfect even during the flowering of the vines. The result was a quite small crop everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and a very nice ripeness, especially for the Merlot. The Cab was great because it was a quite low quantity per plot. And the Merlot was great in terms of aromas. Pure, ripe, but not overripe red fruit. And we consider that the 18 could be quite similar. I don't like to not the equivalent, but quite similar to the vintage 1990. Mm-hmm. Because I remember this vintage. It's more or less the same attractivity, the same... you say gourmandise, something very sweety without any sugar, because the wine is dry, but juicy and with great velvety tannins on the finish. It's 15, 18, 1990, more or less the same profile. But the problem was for some vineyards planted only in pure gravel, and probably more with the following vintage, 2019,
mm-hmm.
Because we still have a very strong dryness. And finally, the berries on this sort of terroir were so tiny without any juice or very few juice. And the problem is the volume of juice in relation with the quantity of skin. Could be changed the profile of the vine. More juice you have, softer could be the extraction of tannins in the skin. But if you have few quantity of juice with the same quantity of skin, the extraction could be more difficult to be sure that you manage very well the extraction of tannins to be well balanced.
What do you see as the biggest challenges going forward in terms of, you know, the younger bringing in newer clients? Because the tastes change, especially younger millennials. What for you guys are the biggest challenges?
I think for new challenges is first to find other grape varieties to be sure that for the next 10, 20 years, we still have something, digest and well balanced. Mm-hmm. Secondly, is also to increase the offer we can propose to the consumer. Today, in many, many estates in Bordeaux, we produce one wine, one grand vin, and a second wine, a second label. Tomorrow, I think a little bit probably as in Burgundy, but we need to propose different blends with probably different labels. It could be, for example, a wine without any added sulfites. Mm-hmm. We produced the last year our first bottling wine without any added sulfites. Next year, we will present a great, unbelievable blend with the picking of just one day with five great varieties picked on the same day. Blend immediately in the tank for the vinification is something very rare and probably not possible to do every year.
Yeah.
You know, open our mind and to propose different blend, different labels to the public.
Is that hard to do in an area like Bordeaux, which has very strict rules? And, you know, these strict rules have certainly, I mean, it's certainly paid off. One of the most famous wine areas in the world, consistently making some of the most fantastic wines. But could a downside be that if you want to try to innovate, that it could be difficult while also doing it within the rules of your appellation?
I agree. The rules are a little bit heavy. And to innovate, it's quite complicated. But the last 3-5 years, all the people managing the wine business, even the Comité Interprofessionnel des Vins de Bordeaux, CIVB, tried to change a lot the figures. And now we are allowed, for example, to plant different grape varieties, not before including in our grape variety allowed.
Really?
Yeah. And it changed a lot. And, probably in France it's a little bit more longer than the other countries, but the most important is that it changed. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we try to also to plant other grape varieties without the recognition AOC, okay? It could be only Vin de France. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We need to innovate, to try, to check, and to reproduce if it's good for the consumer.
Yeah. I'm now just trying to think of the idea of trying to a Tempranillo made in Bordeaux. That'd blow my mind.
But you know, just to have an idea, at La Rose Cantonon, I planted 3 years ago some plants of Marcelin. Marcelin, it's a cross between Cabernet Sauvignon and Grenache. And I planted only 0.5 hectares. But we did our first vinification this year. And It's unbelievable, the quality of the grape variety. And the color is purple. Mm-hmm. The tannins are quite big, but we need to manage it with more experience. And the pH, the acidity, is huge. It could be a fantastic complement to the other grape varieties, with the idea always to produce something well-balanced.
That's got to be exciting, just doing things. I mean, every vintage is exciting because it's always unknown. But yeah, that must be interesting, just trying these other grapes.
You know, I think it's quite rare to have a job where every year you begin with a white paper. You know?
Yeah.
Every year you have a white paper and you need to write another book. And I think it's a you can do the job only if you have a real passion for that. And today at Vignoble de la Rose and on the four estates, we have 70 people working permanently on the vineyards and with exactly the same passion. And I consider, and when I talk about the business with the shareholders, I said that we have really a dream team at Vignoble de la Rose. And it's one of the main key to reach the famous new classification of Cru Bourgeois we had.
Last question for you. How different of a winemaker do you think you are now versus when you got started? Can you tell like the difference between just who you how you made wine then versus now?
Difficult question.
Probably, I know, I'm sorry. Probably. I ended on the difference.
No, but honestly, I think the main key was when I went to Chile. Because I opened completely my mind. It was the impulse to change many things where I worked. Before, we just talking about the quantity of tannins in the wine, the quantity of alcohol, and the quantity of sugar in the berries. Now, absolutely not. We try to think only in terms of finesse and elegance and well balanced. And to go to Chile opened my mind in terms of pleasure to drink. Mm-hmm. When I do many tasting in France or abroad, I talked about the pleasure to drink. And the pleasure to drink is not to drink a lot. It's just to have the same pleasure when you taste a good, nice dish made by your chef. The same pleasure when you have a nice wine in the glass. Just pure pleasure, fruitiness, velvetiness, complexity, and just something easy to be understand.
I think we'll go out on that note. It's been a pleasure, Frank Pigeon, to talk to you. If people want information about, I mean, when this goes out, I'll put all the links and stuff, but about the Vignoble de la Rose, about the wines that we have tried, where can people go for information?
But the wines today are present on the LCBO, mm-hmm. Present also in the private import with our... honestly, it's not our agent, it's more a friend now. Mm-hmm. As a Marchand des Amériques, working with them from many, many years. But in terms, we can talk about the level of prices just to have an idea, for example. But you know, La Rose Trintonon 09 today is a 29.75 Canadian dollar per bottle. Which is 29.75. Mm-hmm. Honestly, to have a vintage so matured and so ready to be drunk, I consider, I can't be objective, but I consider
okay,
that.
Okay, let me say it for you. For under $30 for a really well-made Bordeaux from a very famous vintage, 09 is a very famous vintage, and you're buying wine that is ready to drink now. You don't got to throw it away for 15 years and stare at it all the time. That is great value. For under $30, well-made Bordeaux from a great vintage, that's,
Yeah, thanks.
And the 2010, what's that?
As a 2010, but fantastic too, because Bergançon you could find on the share at $37.90 US dollar, and with this vintage, if people want to do it, it's ready to be drunk, but also you can keep it at least 4, 5, 10 years more.
Yeah,
it's the reason why is people want to begin to build their own cellar. It's really a good alternative now with this sort of wine.
And you can't have a cellar without Bordeaux. What self-respecting wine lover, you know, you need to have it. And these are, yeah, the LCBO. And again, 9 and 10, those are famous, very famous vintages. And for people who want to get into Bordeaux, but, you know, aren't going to spend $500 on a bottle to get, you know, to get wine of these quality, of this high level of Bourgeois, or I keep saying Bourgeois, of Cru Bourgeois. Cru Bourgeois. I dropped French after grade 9. It was the biggest mistake I ever made. If I knew in high school that I was going to be in wine, I think I would have stuck out my French for a couple more years. Hey, Frank, really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're so busy. You're flying all around the world. It's a snowy day here in Toronto. You were delayed coming in. You've been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt, and thanks to the public, because it was a real pleasure to share my passion for this fantastic job, and see you soon.
Absolutely. Hey, everyone, thanks so much for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Audio Boom, you can find me wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.